It's open to 1 Chronicles chapter 13. First Chronicles chapter 13. Please give your attention to the reading of God's holy word. And David consulted with the captains of thousands and hundreds and with every leader. David said unto all the congregation of Israel, If it seem good unto you, and that it be of the Lord our God, let us send abroad unto our brethren everywhere that are left in all the land of Israel, and with them also to the priests and Levites which are in their cities and suburbs, that they may gather themselves unto us. And let us bring again the ark of our God to us, for we inquired not at it in the days of Saul. And all the congregation said that they would do so, for the thing was right in the eyes of all the people. So David gathered all Israel together from Shihor of Egypt, even unto the entering of Hamath, to bring the ark of God from Kirjath-Jearim. And David went up, and all Israel, to Baalah, that is, to Kirjath-Jearim, which belonged to Judah, to bring up thence the ark of God the Lord, that dwelleth between the cherubims, whose name is called on it. And they carried the ark of God in a new cart out of the house of Abinadab, and Uzzah and Ahio drave the cart. David and all Israel played before God with all their might, and with singing, and with harps, and with psalteries, and with timbrels, and with cymbals, and with trumpets. And when they came unto the threshing floor of Kidon, Uzzah put forth his hand to hold the ark, for the oxen stumbled. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and he smote him, because he put his hand to the ark, and there he died before God. And David was displeased because the Lord had made a breach upon Uzzah. Wherefore that place is called Perez Uzzah to this day. And David was afraid of God that day, saying, How shall I bring the ark of God home to me? So David brought not the ark home to himself to the city of David, but carried it aside into the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. And the ark of God remained with the family of Obed-Edom in his house 3 months. And the Lord blessed the house of Obed-Edom and all that he had. Thus ends the reading of God's holy word. Well, seeing that this chapter concerns itself with the narrative of David and all Israel bringing the ark of God to dwell in Jerusalem, it might be helpful to remember where the ark of God has dwelt up to this point. In the days of Joshua, you might recall that after they'd conquered much of Canaan, Joshua set the tabernacle and the ark in a place called Shiloh. In the days of Eli the priest, under the influence of his sons, they took out the ark from the tabernacle to take it out into battle against the Philistines, and they lost it to them. After that, it circulates among the Philistines for about 7 months or more, causes terror and judgments among them, and they send it back to Israel in a cart, arriving at a place temporarily called Beth Shemesh. Then, at Beth Shemesh, a bunch of men, we're told 50,310 men from Beth Shemesh, are killed by God for looking into the ark, something that they weren't supposed to do. So in fear, they call for a place more interior, Kirjath-Jearim, to come fetch the ark from them. And the ark is then settled there in Kirjath-Jearim in the house of a man named Abinadab, even all the way to this day when David's kingdom is established. It's stayed there this whole time. So why? Why, after so long of the ark being there for several decades, seeming to cause no problems, we might think of a modern maxim, right? If something isn't broken, why attempt to fix it? Why take up the energy and momentum of the beginning rain that you now have come address this problem? Well, verse 3 gives us the motive stated implicitly. David says, Let us bring again the ark of our God to us, for we inquired not at it in the days of Saul. In other words, we had a duty and a privilege to seek the Lord through his appointed means, of which the ark was given for in that day. And we have not done so up to this point from the days of Saul's reign. The ark, you may recall, was that peculiar sign to the people of God's presence among them, his favor, where he promised to Moses, I will meet with thee and I will commune with thee from above the mercy seat, from between the cherubims which are upon the ark of testimony. Note in David's consultation with the leaders, this assembly that he gathers together, he does not place the entire blame and fault upon Saul, although there might be principal fault there. But he says, verse 3, we inquired not at it in the days of Saul. And so we might imagine him saying, if it seem good to you, let us jointly seek to correct this deficiency in our obedience and devotion to Jehovah. Let us set this kingdom in order that the presence, the favor, the worship, and direction of Jehovah should have priority in this realm, that it should have a place of distinction where the king himself should live. And all the congregation, verse 4, said that they would do so, for the thing was right in the eyes of all the people. In all this, let us admire four things. First, David's heart and desire. David was preoccupied with Jehovah having preeminence in Israel, that all his appointments should be kept, observed, treasured. David was, according to the Lord, a man after mine own heart. Secondly, should admire David's putting feet to his lofty desire. David was not a mere big talker. Whatever was in his purview to do about this great desire, he did. Notice his activity. Verse 1, David consulted. Verse 2, David said unto all. Verse 5, David gather all Israel. Verse 6, David went up. Verse 8, David played before God. So we admire his putting feet, his practicality to these great desires. We also admire, third, David's humility and esteem for those under him. He doesn't run on his own to Kirjath-Jearim to bring back the ark or just command some of his men to take care of it and bring it, but rather he consults with the captains of thousands and hundreds and with every leader. In the congregation, verse 2, he speaks of sending abroad unto our brethren everywhere that are left in the land of Israel, the priests and Levites, that they might gather themselves unto us. David understood the ark was a public affair. The ark of God concerns all the people of God as represented in their leaders. Let as many as can join themselves with us in a public spirit of devotion towards Jehovah bring up this ark together. And as the beloved people of the Lord, David was not ashamed to call them brethren. Those who were his subjects he called brethren. And as a type of our Lord Jesus Christ, likewise, he is unashamed to call his servants brethren. One last thing we'll admire from this section of the chapter is the people's consent and unity in a good cause and work under a good leader. We do not read of murmuring or disputing and contention, but a public spirit that is in one accord to take up with David in this cause. Well, as we know, all seems well, encouraging, inspiring even, that all were set about to this great work. We're told about 30,000 in 2 Samuel 6. However, verse 7 sounds the alarm to those that are familiar with Mosaic priestly law. Verse 7, they carried the ark of God in a new cart out of the house of Abinadab, and Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, drave the cart. This was directly contrary to the Lord's word unto Moses and Aaron in Numbers 4:15, where some of the Levites were alone permitted to bear up the tabernacle and ark. It was not to be put on a cart. And David will confirm this later in two chapters from now, where he attempts a second time to bring it up. And he will confess and conclude that we sought not Jehovah after the due order. A question arises. How is it among 30,000 leaders, captains, and priests that it occurred to no one among them that this should be a problem? So encouraging, so much momentum, such movement in the right direction. And yet this detail missed to upset the whole affair. We might consider first, as one has said, that they had been long strangers to the ark and never questioned that they might safely do what the Philistines had done before them by putting it upon a cart. Philistines sent it back in a cart. Nothing wrong happened then. Why may we not do the same? Or secondly, we might consider the facility of using a cart in bringing it all that way from Kirjath-Jearim to Jerusalem. Well, it's a lot perhaps simpler than carrying it upon someone's shoulders the whole way. Third, we might consider also that the ark had been for several decades in Uzzah's and Ahio's father's house, Abinadab, and no such tragedy had fallen out for several decades. Why would they think of such a thing falling out now? But now that the ark should be received publicly, brought under new circumstances and handling, the Lord would press them to a closer abiding to his word in that worship which he has revealed. You may recall what Moses said to Aaron upon the consuming of his two sons, upon offering strange fire at the very outset of their ministry. Moses says to Aaron, "This is that the Lord spake, saying, I will be sanctified in them that come nigh me, and before all the congregation, all the people, I will be glorified." Returning to our text, we'll notice we're informed about the cart in verse 7, but nothing occurs until verse 10. Brothers and sisters, be careful. Be careful that you do not presume that because everything exterior is going well, that all is well when you are running contrary or aside from God's commands and ways. When the tragedy occurs, after Uzzah attempts to stay the ark with his hand, we read, and perhaps we even be led to sympathize with David. We read verse 11, David was displeased because the Lord had made a breach against Uzzah or upon him. And verse 12, David was afraid of God that day, saying, "How shall I bring the ark of God home to me?" The irony is that at the first part, we're to admire David for his holy zeal, for what he ought to be doing. And yet at the very end, when we see his disappointment, some of us may be tempted to sympathize and empathize with him more than we should have before. With his feelings, with his discontentedness, with his displeasure with God himself. It is here we may feel the weight, as it were, pressing down upon us of God's utter holiness. God in such a time may feel so wholly separate and different, chastising us for things that seem so small and uncertain in our eyes. We ask, what may David have done in such a time and with such feelings? What may we do? Well, perhaps with Job and not knowing the cause, we may cry out in Job 10, "Do not condemn me, show me wherefore thou contendest with me." Or Elihu in Job 34, that which I see not, teach thou me. If I have done iniquity, I will do no more. Or as Aaron, perhaps if we know, hold our peace. Let our great conviction and knowledge of who and what God is and is doing restrain us from breaking out in argument with God. Recognize our inability to see things and feel things as we ought. Let not that which is meant to do you and the people of God good be an occasion for offense and stumbling. Where else will you go to? From whom do you expect to receive any good but God himself who chastises you? Lamentations 3 reminds us that the Lord will not chastise forever. Though he cause grief, yet will he have compassion according to the multitude of his mercies. And so with James, we say, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. David, although stumbling, will indeed be lifted up. He'll turn to see the error of his ways and attempt once more to bring the ark successfully. Meanwhile, the chapter doesn't end on that sad and discontented note. We read that the ark got left with the family of Obed-Edom in his house 3 months. And in those 3 months, we read the Lord blessed the house of Obed-Edom and all that he had. There was a public, visible recognition that the Lord was showing favor to this house because he had received God's ordinance, the ark, dwelling with him. God would not have it that this act of chastisement upon their errors should cause the godly to despair of his desire to commune with them. We see here that God follows this incident of chastisement with visible blessing upon the man that would welcome it. By this, God would overcome David's despairing and discontent, that he and all Israel might see that it is good to draw near to God, and it is still good to have him near, that he delights to draw near to them that draw near to him and to favor them. In 2 Samuel 6, it is this very visible and notable blessing of Obed-Edom's house that is reported to David and causes him, as one author has said, to be freed from those slavish fears he was before possessed of, and filled with hopes of being blessed also, even as the house of Obed-Edom, on account of the ark, if they would but bring to Jerusalem the ark according to command, God's commanded order. And we conclude with this: the blessing, congregation of Obed-Edom's house, was then and remains a testimony to all the people of God that Jehovah is pleased to be a rewarder of those that diligently seek him according to the way he has revealed to seek him. And with that, we end 1 Chronicles 13.